Welcome to the Disrupting Wellbeing Podcast with me, Petra Belzebor. This show is simple. I want to go beyond bubble bath well-being and really think about the world we live in and what it takes to thrive. With a mix of interviews and direct advice from me, we'll get into all sorts of things, including challenging the cult in culture, taking off the masks and learning to be ourselves, how to have brave conversations, and thinking about how to challenge groupthink and evolve our lives and workplaces for the future. Let's dive into our next episode. Welcome, everyone, to season two of the Disrupting Wellbeing Podcast. We're going to do things a little bit differently for this season. We're still going to have some exciting guests and people that I'll interview and that I want to find out about how to disrupt wellbeing specifically in the workplace, but also just in how we're thinking about it, because I think we're getting a little bit stuck in even the self-help versions of well-being are just kind of adding things to to-do lists rather than really genuinely listening to our body. And I think there's like a danger that if we continue on this track, we're going to lose touch with how we're feeling. We're going to have technology telling us how we feel or what our heart's doing or what different things are doing, but perhaps not really connecting to ourselves. And I think this is a real thread to why many of us are experiencing more depression and anxiety. I'm Petra Belzebor. I'm your host for the show. And what we're also going to do besides our fabulous interviews is by popular demand. So people have asked sort of, Petra, can you do some advice episodes? So giving us some tips, advice, and just things from my experience that perhaps people ask me all the time in order to pass on messages or my learning to as many of you as possible. So these are going to be shorter episodes, imperfect, because I just like doing one take and giving you as much of just my raw energy and insight as possible. So here goes. I've got lots of topics that have come through as questions. So things like, how do I manage burnout? How do I think about anxiety personally? I've been experiencing depression for ages. What do I do about it? Even things like, I want to get some counseling, but where do I start? Who do I talk to? What are the places that I go? And there's something about like setting yourself up for success when it comes to accessing therapeutic support. If you're anything like me with my history, and some of you will know my story, I'll touch on it in a minute. Anything to do with authority figures and a therapist, a psychologist, all these people, GPs, your doctor, they're all authority figures, or that's how it feels. So sometimes we sit back and wait for them to treat us, but we don't actually have any agency in talking about, well, what we need, what our body is telling us, and kind of trust that instinct and insight. So those are some of the topics I'm going to cover throughout this year, throughout season two. But I'm going to kick off with something a little bit personal, because a lot of times I get this question, and it could be after a keynote or after a webinar, an event, whatever it might be, a panel event. And people say, you know, how do I change my life? Now, this sounds like a really loaded big question. But the reason they ask me is because when I tell my story, I talk about some of the rock bottom moments that I had. So absolutely kind of in the rock bottom, told you it was going to be imperfect. So I'll give you some context, and you can read this on my website. And I've talked about my story a lot, so I'm not going to spend too much time there. I want to give you tips for moving your life forward, no matter where you are at the moment. But I guess I started, I was born and raised in a cult, right? And when I left at 22, I was pregnant. I moved to London. So I now didn't have a support network, didn't know anybody, didn't have an education because we didn't go to school as kids. And so it was kind of starting from the bottom anyway. But because of the trauma I'd experienced, I then spiraled into much worse addiction, hopelessness, despair, suicidal thinking, the works, right? And so hit several rock bottom moments, which sort of put myself, my kids, you know, just in danger, this kind of not wanting to live experience, right? So really hardcore in a sense. And I say that knowing full well that there's many people who have had much worse experiences. And then many people who would say, well, it didn't get that bad for me. I'm actually living in a space that's like a bit meh, as they say, like this middle road of like, oh, I don't feel alive and on fire and excited about life. But it's not that bad. But so, you know, I'm feeling depressed. I'm feeling anxious. And so the question I get is, Petra, I know that that's where you came from, but now you're running a business and, you know, you're on stage and you're you've got a podcast and your kids are big and things seem really great. How do I think about, you know, if I'm in a place where I don't like my job, or I'm in an abusive or unhealthy relationship, or I don't have the qualifications I thought I needed, or, you know, I feel stuck, where do I go from here? And so I've got kind of three key headings to go through. And I know there'll be questions off the back of this. Please do kind of send them to me, because I know this won't be exhaustive and cover every single experience for everybody, but I want to just cover some of the things. So how do I start? How do I change a life? And the first thing, I mean, it seems simple, but it's slowly. We change our lives slowly. And so there's like that change curve. I don't know if anybody has kind of seen it. I'm sure you have, especially if you're in the workplace. The change curve starts with, if we think two lines that are parallel to each other, sort of going across horizontally, trying to describe for you audio listeners, and nothing looks like it's changing because you're literally on the same path, it seems. You might be doing some internal change. You might be doing some mindset shifts, maybe one small, tiny thing, but you're like, my God, how is this going to change an entire life? And how am I ever going to feel grateful, excited, good, right? But the thing is, when we do those tiny, tiny internal things consistently, over time, that change curve, that top parallel line just starts to be like a millimeter up, a millimeter again, a centimeter, an inch, whatever your metrics are. It shifts slowly. Now, over 5 years, over a decade, over 20 years, that change curve like absolutely fundamentally changes your entire life, right? So my son is now 20. So that's 20 years of moving from a place of uneducated, pregnant, rock bottom, addiction, like that whole thing, shifting into where I'm at now, right? And of course, there's still places that I want to go, and I don't believe in like, I have arrived and it's all fine. However, I do know, I'm getting excited about this topic now, that shifting kind of things slowly, but it means shifting your mindset into a growth mindset. I'm sure many of you have heard Carol Dweck. She's got so many talks. She's got a great book called Around Mindset, but it highlights the difference between a fixed mindset, so black and white thinking, and I see this so much these days, especially when so many of us are in survival mode. And so what I mean by that, survival mode makes us protect ourselves. And with the world as it is in a post-COVID world, so many of us are so much more in survival mode than ever before. And a key symptom to know you're in survival mode is if you think you only ever have two choices. It's either this way or it's this way. I grew up like that. So I'm a bit like, ooh. But it also took me training as a therapist and as a coach to learn to ask myself, what's in the middle? So when you have two choices, you always want to go, what is in the middle? Because there will be a whole range of things that you hadn't really thought of if you're in survival mode. And sometimes when we hate our lives, we also get into survival mode because we think everything is, you know, life or death. I have to stay in this shitty job. I have to stay in this unhealthy relationship. Otherwise, I will quote unquote die. I will starve. I won't have a house. Like, we go into this catastrophic thinking, right? And hey, I thought all of those things at the beginning. I thought there was no hope that I was going to be like washing dishes and bottles and taking kids to playgrounds for the rest of my life. And, you know, I thought I was born for something more. And that doesn't mean, you know, the great things, being born for something more could be about how we want to be, feel alive and experience life in the absolute best ways possible. I have no idea when I started this, so I have no idea when I've hit 30 minutes, but yay me, let's just keep going. So you start slowly. And so for me, it was going to recovery groups and quitting drinking. Now that seems like a big thing, but I didn't know I was going to quit drinking for the last 15 years. I just knew that I was desperate and I was going to show up to this one meeting just for today, right? And over time, that decision stacks. It reduced my depression. It gave me energy. I didn't have hangovers anymore. But what I did have to do was sit with my own emotions. Now, when we wake up and decide we're going to change our life, and that doesn't mean we have a 10-year plan and a vision for the future. It just means I am now so fed up of this life that something has to shift and I'm willing to just show up and do one small thing. That one small thing could be writing down one thing you're grateful for. And I know these days, like, the well-being space is filled with influencers and people telling you to do 25 things before you even start your work, right? Take that ice plunge, take the go to meditate, exercise, journal, blah, 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 do all the things. For me, it's starting with one small thing, and it can be a different thing at a different time in your life. That's how we stack habits. That's how we create change. Gratitude for me was something massively useful and important, because when you're stuck in a victim mindset, and that's my number two here, when you're stuck in a victim mindset, you think there's no point, everything's hopeless, and the world is to blame, and anything I do will also be kind of knocked back, right? So a victim mindset blames your past, it blames your parents, it blames your context, your environment, your partner, your boss, it blames everyone else. And forget all of that might be true, and yet you are responsible for your life. So for me, the mindset shift had to be, yes, I was raised in a cult. Yes, I didn't go to school, these different things, right? Yes, those people were to blame for the place that I found myself in. And yet I am responsible to take radical responsibility for the next bit of my life. And so nobody's going to be getting sleepless nights from the past about the misery that I'm in now or where my life ends up. So at some point, we need to take responsibility for the next step of our lives and what we want to do with it. And so that does bring me to my second point, which is around shifting from a victim mindset to a growth mindset. So I've started to cover that a little bit, but some of that means like understanding that everything we experience is not a trigger from our past. And I would say to myself, like, hey, I'm experiencing normal people problems right now, which might be, you know, a traffic jam or, you know, a disappointment or a canceled meeting or something that goes on. Because otherwise, if you experience trauma like I have, your nervous system kind of tells you, oh my God, everything is information or evidence for why I'm a victim of my past. So anything like a frustrating day with your toddlers, frustrating because you feel like you're, you know, behind the tracks of everybody else, all of these things act as evidence for your victim mindset. But shifting allows you to go, gratitude helps, and knowing that a growth mindset means you are learning every day, and I would add taking responsibility for the next part of your life. And so for me, thinking this is a normal people problem was really useful to separate out like, oh, life is full of challenges and that's okay. Learning how to manage them is my responsibility. Of course, what I mean by separating out is there would be pieces that were more difficult for me, and you'll recognize this in yourself if you've experienced trauma in the past. So having that, those triggers, learning to work on things slowly, whether it's with therapy, with coaching, with reading, with informing yourself and educating yourself, all of these things can help you play a part in shifting from a victim mindset to a growth mindset. Now, a growth mindset also means taking risks, and that's pretty scary if your nervous system is in protect mode, survival mode, right? But taking risks is really the way to, over time, lead you to a place where you can live your version of your life, not anybody else's. Now, I grew up in coercive control, intensive groupthink, and had to take a lot of time to think about like, well, what are my thoughts and what do I want versus what is my blueprint? Now, what I didn't realize was when I left, because I thought when I left, everyone else was just free and it was easy. How wrong was I? I realized that everybody has a blueprint. So everybody has a blueprint that is influenced by their education, by their background, by their childhood, by their influences, and all of these things. You have a blueprint. Understanding what that blueprint is will help you separate out, oh, that's my past blueprint versus what's the blueprint I want to create for the future? What's the blueprint I want to give my kids? What is my responsibility as far as how I want to engage in the workplace, engage in relationships? Because relationships are tricky. Relationships are tricky because they bring up all the triggers from our past that we haven't worked on yet. And they're beautiful for being a learning ground, a testing ground, a place to kind of figure out what those triggers are and learn how to emotionally regulate. Now, emotion regulation, I hadn't written that down on my list, but it's probably one of the biggest skills that we need if we're going to develop. So develop from childhood to adolescence to adulthood, and then of course to parenting, that developmental process, if you've had some trauma, can kind of get skipped a little bit or have a little bit of a mishmash. And so you see grown people having kind of tantrums and fits, you know, kind of reminiscent of what a toddler might do in a store if they want chocolate, right? And that's because they haven't learned how to emotionally regulate, to understand that their feelings and emotions are not to be afraid of, and we don't need to kind of put them out all over the place all of the time. Feel your feelings for sure, but emotion regulation is learning as an adult how to communicate them effectively. So you start slowly, you shift from a victim mindset to a growth mindset, but also you take relentless action. And what I mean by that is I see so many people with, maybe it's a perfectionist, whatever label you want to give it, I don't really care. But whatever excuse or reason, to me, it is an excuse to not take the action, which feels scary, right? Action feels scary. There's risk. There's rejection. What if I get it wrong? I'm going to be an outsider. I already am. That's going to trigger a whole thing, right? So how do we move past that fear, right? And we do it through action. And so if you say, hey, I'm a perfectionist, or this is the sneaky one that I hear, I'm waiting until I get this qualification, or I'm credible in this way, or I've reached this milestone, or I've done this thing. Yes, reach the milestones, do the things if that's what feels right to you. But you could always and forever use that thought process to limit you from changing your life and doing the things you really want to do. So if I said, well, I'm not going to take action until my education is complete, or until I've had all these types of experiences to build my credibility, well, I wouldn't have gotten the experiences to build my credibility, right? And so putting yourself out there in small, tiny ways allows you to get the practice. You know, it happens in relationships too. People think, you know, once I've worked on myself and once I've done all the work on myself, then I will be ready for a partner. And then ta-da, you still get triggered and you still have those things to work with that person. And so by all means, be working on yourself. But if we kind of keep ourselves in a cocoon or a cave where we're working on ourselves, but don't actually put it into practice. So going on dates, connecting with people, putting yourself out there, whatever it is that's outside of your comfort zone, that's like getting the reps in, right? That end up helping you build the skill. And then finally, there's maintenance, right? And so even though I've got a business and my kids are great and different things are going good in my life, doesn't mean I don't get triggered still. Doesn't mean I don't still have those moments where that victim mindset kind of jumps back in, or that shame voice that says, you know, you're not enough or whatever. It doesn't mean it completely disappears. But my God, the volume is turned down lower. The volume is turned down lower. And I can almost recognize what that like, oh, thank you voice or experience, physical experience that used to keep me safe. I actually am safe now, right? And I'll give you an example because it's fresh in my mind and why not keep it real, right? Just yesterday, I went to an event. And the last time I'd been to this event, it had felt really kind of intimate and safe. I'd met some really interesting people and it was kind of a discussion group on a topic, whatever. And so I thought, great stuff, I'm going to go again and there's a different one. So this time, the group and the experience was very different. There were maybe double the amount of people. The room was quite warm and hot. I was a little bit flustered because I was a bit late. And then where I sat in the room was kind of in the middle of the room, which meant I was surrounded by tables and people behind me. Now, that might seem insignificant to some people, but if you've experienced complex PTSD or certain traumas, there'll be just little triggers that can be environmental that can affect you. So for me, people being behind me and voices being behind me can sometimes, if I'm a little bit more sensitive, make me feel a little bit unsafe. So that was like the first thing. But I'd been feeling so good for weeks and weeks and weeks, not triggered. I almost kind of was like, I got this, right? And then the universe reminds you that, oh, you know, I am but a woman and these things can still come up. But what's going to be interesting here, I hope, is that is the way we respond and handle things can be completely different and can vastly change our experience to those triggers and what happens to us. And so the way the debate was managed was not very clear. I don't think psychological safety was built in the group. Like everyone was a stranger pretty much. And then what my experience of it, because I was in a triggered state, so I'm not saying this is what happened, but my experience of it was that there became like, you know, a male ego kind of competitive battle thing going on in the room where people wanted their voices to be heard. And there was things that were off topic that felt unself-aware. And yeah, and again, so the voices were coming around from all sides of me. Anyway, whatever the thing was that happened, the trigger was that my nervous system started getting a bit kind of, you know, hot, right? And so nobody else could tell. And I'm very good, as you probably are, at just being like, I was more quiet. I was fidgeting with my hands here a little bit more kind of under the table. My breathing was becoming a little bit more shallow. And I was thinking, okay, just wait it out. It's fine. Like everyone just is a little bit different. I was also watching the group process about how people are in groups, right? What leaders show up, what voices are heard, but interestingly, what voices are not heard. And so everybody from a diverse background was not heard. And so for me, growing up in a cult where we lived in communes and big groups, it was a patriarchal society. So all these men talking was something, right? And then that being the underdog before makes me hyper alert to the underdogs in the room. And then I didn't really have a voice because I felt like my voice would come from a triggered place rather than a useful place. So I shut my voice down, which is another, like, I don't have a voice, right? So I hope you can just translate this personal story into whatever the triggers are for you. And the key themes are what's happening in your body, what are your thoughts, right? And what is the memory or the resonance from the past or about authority or whatever it might be that's useful for your experience. And so I did actually have to leave the room. So during a break, so I kind of waited it out and I actually was able to leave the session, went to the bathroom, did a little kind of handshake because you'll have tools and tactics to handle the kind of buildup of that nervous system energy or trauma. And so I was able to kind of shake it out. I know I look ridiculous, but whatever works for you, right? And I did actually end up leaving the session completely. Now, what's interesting here is I'm a grown woman and I could leave the session if I wanted to. So I had tools to keep me safe. It wasn't like I was trapped in like back in the day, right? And so I was emotional when I came out and I was a bit like, and I knew I could almost observe that trigger as like, oh, your emotions are showing up. That was actually a bit more intense than you thought it was going to be. And so in the past, that same type of trigger might have lasted days of like, ugh, like recovery, like body exhaustion, not wanting to spend time with particular people, maybe being a bit more short-tempered, maybe being a bit more sensitive to light and noise, you know. But what happened instead was there was just the travel home. I text a friend and was like, ooh, just, you know, feeling a bit this. She was like, sorry, you feel like that. I've got you. Do you want to talk? And I was like, I'm just going to get some food. I'm going to get on the train. And in the past, I might also have, you know, absolutely emotionally ate to like eat my feelings or to like kind of manage the emotional state. But instead, I was like, thank you, body. I know that this isn't about today. This is about other things. You are safe. You are powerful and able to go home and do your own thing. I just went to sleep. Anyway, all of that story is to highlight that maintenance still occurs even today, but it's much less often. And the cycles of where those triggers show up are much shorter. I mean, what a relief, right? So there can still be the voice that kind of says, I can't believe this is still happening. You're still doing this to yourself. You're still experiencing these things. And I've got beautiful friends that will just say, is that your shame voice? And I'll be like, yes, it is. Actually, it's fine. I'm safe, you know? So less of the critical, you're a bad person because you're feeling a certain way. It's like more of a compassionate, like, oh, you feel certain things because you feel. So that's my final thing. I keep saying my final thing, but I get excited about this topic. Feeling the feelings is what it means to be alive. Now, when you've gone through tough stuff or you're in a tough spot, you don't want to feel things because it's too overwhelming. And so we numb out, we eat, we watch Netflix, we shop, we watch porn, we have unhealthy sex or relationships. We do all of these things to not feel or to feel a quick dopamine hit that's kind of a fake high rather than, and obviously booze and drugs and things like that, which was part of my story, but we're not really feeling our bodies, our emotions. And actually when we feel things, it means we feel the tough stuff as well as the good stuff. So interestingly, before this example I'd given you, that day I was feeling so many great things. I was feeling grateful. I was feeling excited. I was feeling like life was amazing, all of these things. So I was open to being fully alive and feeling things. And then I went into this situation, maybe a little bit tired. It was an evening event. And, you know, I also felt some of the tough stuff, right? And we get this with, Brené Brown talks a lot about this. We get this with people we love, right? So she uses this great description and I relate. You open the door and your child is like sleeping there and just looks so angelic and beautiful and is just amazing. And your heart is just, oh, it's just filled with so much love and gratitude and beautiful things. And she says in the very next minute or second, right? You think, what if something bad happens to them, right? So our brain kind of, you know, if we're going to feel the good things, we're also going to feel the tough things. So she says so beautifully, if you want to feel joy, that beautiful feeling of being fully alive, well, you're also going to feel the pain or the struggle or the risk of loss and these different things. So when I have big feelings and I have big ones about good things and like, oh my God, my son's at university and is he safe, right? I feel privileged. I feel so privileged that I get to, not I have to, I get to feel the full range of what it is to be human in the world. That's a privilege because I spent a lot of my time avoiding, numbing out, and trying not to feel, and that's no way to live. And I think that's why many of us are experiencing depression and anxiety, because when we push down our feelings for too long, hey, it's like a little volcanic eruption. They've got to sort of pop out at some point somewhere. And so it's coming out maybe in physical symptoms. Maybe we have to eat more, shop more, do the things to avoid more, right? In order to sustain, just like any addiction, in order to sustain that same level of equilibrium. And when we start asking ourselves, what do we want? And so when I trained as a coach, that was one of the questions that radically changed my life. They said, what do you want? And it was a practice kind of session thing. And I was a bit floored. I was like, sorry, what now? Right? Do you mean what should I do or what do I need to do? And women, you'll probably maybe resonate with this even more, but men as well. What should I do? What does society want me to do? My parents, background, blah, 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 all the things. Expectations, you know, we want to belong. So we want to feel like we're doing the things that will help us belong. But when somebody says, what do you want? I mean, this is many years ago now, and I cried and cried and cried because I'd never, ever, 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 ever been asked that question or asked myself that question. I was raising kids out of duty. I was being as good a girlfriend and wife as I could be. I was going to school and starting to educate myself, but really for the purpose of survival and fitting in as well. So what I asked, sometimes when you finally ask yourself, what do you want? The answer might be a little scary because the answer that came to me was, I need to get divorced. I want to live an independent life. I want to take risks and build things that perhaps I wasn't able to do in the life that I'd created and was in it up until that point. So sometimes when we ask ourselves those questions, we get, you know, startling answers. But the interesting thing is the wisdom is usually within us. It is. And I know this from the coaching clients I have and the therapy clients I have, is that the wisdom is within them, but it's just creating enough safety and enough creative room to really look at, you know, if I was on my deathbed many years from now and was looking back, what would I want to see in my life, right? What experiences, what love, what connection, what work, what joy, all the things. And then you might be like, but it's impossible. How do I even get there? And that's when we go full circle and come back to start slowly. Awareness is the first step. Doing tiny things for your health, your body, your mindset are crucial to creating that ripple effect, that kind of momentum on the change curve that enables you 5 years from now, 10 years from now to look back and be like, holy shit. I have holy shit moments all the time where I'm like, oh my God, I get to do work that I love. I get to do work that I enjoy. I'm connected to amazing people. My mental health is great. I have great relationships with my kids. And yes, I'm still learning. And yes, I'm still taking risks and moving myself forward. And just when you get to one comfort zone, then you think, oh my goodness, this feels too safe now. What's my next comfort zone? But mental health is about reaching potential. So how do you change your life? You begin to go on the curious path to discover what your potential is. Now, I think I am totally at time, but I could talk about this all day. Hit me up on LinkedIn or in the YouTube comment, message me, and let me know if there are other topics that you would love me to cover, what you got from this one. And please do check out my website, petravelsbord.com. And I look forward to being with you, connecting with you in the next episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please do me a favor and like, subscribe, or even write a review. I promise to continue to offer amazing guests and real advice on the things that will help you thrive. If there's something specific that you would like me to cover, then do send over your questions directly on LinkedIn by DMing me or through my website, petravelsbord.com, and I will answer them in an upcoming episode. See you soon.